Hello, it's Eoin Shehan here from Off The Ball, and the FIFA World Cup 2026 is here. And let's be honest, the matchday version of ourselves can look a little committed. Jerseys, face paint, scarves and questionable weather, whatever you have, maybe even a full costume if your team makes a run, you can look a little worse for wear come the end of it all. But the World Cup, it's not just about the football. It's the atmosphere, it's the nights in the pub, it is the watch parties with your mates, and maybe even meeting someone new. That is where Lynx comes in. As an official personal care sponsor of the FIFA World Cup 2026, Lynx's premium fragrances are here to help you smell your best, even in the middle of full matchday madness. Lynx, smell your best when you look your worst. Now, enjoy your podcast.
Off The Ball, GAA.
I feel we're in such a special place right now in Gaelic football. We're giving it a go. We're trying things out. There's an energy and everyone seems to love it, lads.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Hey OTB members, as we approach the Guinness Six Nations showdown of Ireland against France, OTB's own Brian O'Driscoll joins us for an exclusive event at the Open Gate Brewery. We're going to preview the big game as well as look back on his last ever game for Ireland, which was against France 11 years ago. His former teammates Gordon Darcy and Devon Toner will also be along on the day. And this members-only show has a very limited number of free tickets. It's on Tuesday the 4th of March at 3pm at the Open Gate Brewery at St James's Gate in Dublin. The first 50 entries will be heading along, but you must be available at 3 o'clock in the afternoon on Tuesday the 4th of March. So don't delay. Get your entry in now. You can email events@offtheball.com. Tickets are free but limited, and make sure you're free on Tuesday the 4th of March at 3pm.
The LOI Pod on Off The Ball. Catch live and exclusive national radio commentary of the Men's League of Ireland Premier Division on Off The Ball all season.
All right, you're welcome along to the League of Ireland podcast. Nathan with you this week. Vinnie Pert and Gareth McGlynn with us as always. How are we keeping, lads?
We were just chatting about... You were being nice to Nathan Collins last night, weren't you? You were sort of like a fanboy interviewing him.
Wow, that's what a way to start the podcast. What do you want me to say to a guy who's played every minute in the Premier League this season, who's comfortably proved to be Premier League quality, who's been captaining the national team? Do you want me to shit all over his season, or what would you like?
Well, we just felt it was a little bit fanboy. Wow. At least one of us are willing to say to your face, that's the difference.
Wow.
It's like, you're like Virgil.
I never said he was like Virgil. Really well. I pointed out the stat that himself and Van Dijk are the only ones who played every minute.
Fanboy.
I thought it was brilliant, Nathan. Don't listen
to
him.
Thanks, Gareth. You'll be back next week. You know, I just wanted to take a break from the Evan Ferguson fanboying that happens the rest of the time, Vinny.
Yeah, you lads in there. Yeah, you lads do that. Yeah.
Anyway, we're not about the Premier League right now. We're all about the League of Ireland on the League of Ireland podcast, funnily enough. And tomorrow night, we're going to have live and exclusive national radio commentary of Shelburne against Shamrock Rovers live from Talca Park. It'll be myself and Richie Towell and Eoin Sheehan. We're on air from 7 o'clock. It is, of course, a meeting of the champions and, well, the team that we're, 10 minutes away from making it 5 in a row. It is the third week of the season, but this is a very, very big game. We also have Cork against Bowes, Derry against Waterford, Drogheda against Galway and Pats against Sligo Rovers. But we might start on Shells against Shamrock Rovers. And it's very difficult, Vinny, to predict what's going to happen here because we haven't really seen enough of Shamrock Rovers so far. We've seen the European games. We saw the match against Bowes squeezed in there as well. But the fact the Cork game was postponed means they've 8 days to prepare for this one. And despite the fact they've 0 points, they've only played one game. So what are you expecting from Rovers tomorrow night?
It's hard to predict Rovers in terms of where they're at and where they are in terms of injuries. Obviously, the two suspensions in the last game in Europe, they'll come back in. But you wonder how significant the wear and tear that European, sort of the away game, the home game, or the away game, the home game, and sandwiched in between that, the Bowls game, and much that's taken out of them. So it feels like, look, we're three games in and people are going to maybe accuse me of being a bit hysterical, but it feels like this is a huge week for them in terms of they could wake up on Saturday morning 9 points behind Shelbourne after three games and to play St. Pat's next week. And while I hope they're not, like, you look at you look at across the water and Man City became very old, very quick, right in front of us in the blink of an eyelid. There's a concern that Rovers haven't regenerated the squad enough, and we're about to find this is a big test for them. They could win these next two games and have a really good start to the season, don't get me wrong, but this is a huge game for them. People will say, you know, if they lose against Shells, how are they able to leave? I'm not suggesting that, but I'm saying they made themselves a mountain to climb. So it's really concerning where they're at and how big of a game this is from a Shamrock Rovers perspective.
There's a lot in that, Gareth, because we have for the first time this season the Monday fixtures as well, and Rovers go down to Sligo and Shells go down to Galway. And I think Vinny's maybe touched on the big question mark. A rejuvenation is happening at Shamrock Rovers. We just don't know if it's enough.
Yeah, it's and we knew it had to come as well, both financially and the age profile of the squad. I mean, they couldn't keep going with the amount of big earners that they had on their books over the last two or three years. We've all seen the financial reports, so they needed to trim down the squad. They've done that. I think, well, I'm very surprised that there hasn't been a striker come in, and obviously the window's closed now. I'm very surprised that they haven't. So they've got to go with Noonan Aaron Green and now Gaffney as well. So Gaffney obviously struggled for time, struggled for fitness, struggled for minutes. Aaron Green, to be fair to him, is always available and is a real, real good player, but he's getting on in age. And then you've Noonan's the other age of the spectrum. He's very young. Listen, I don't think Stephen Bradley would be too worried. That would be a concern for me, the striking options. But the way they played in both legs of the European match against Mulder, I thought they were the better team over the both legs. I thought they were brilliant. A lot of just tactically, the way they had Burke dropping in and Aaron McAnuff going beyond. I also think, and we've touched on it before, is pace is a big problem. And I think that's why they need Clark back. I don't know when he's going to be back. Is he back training? But having him in the team on that left-hand side for pace is huge. Aaron McAniff did it in European match, especially at home. He was brilliant. He was just going on behind, stretching teams. So I think that's a big thing for them. But, I mean, then you look at the contrast to Shells, and I know we're talking about Rovers, but Shells, the amount of players and the age profile that they have signed. You've got McElroy 24, Chapman 24, Adebeku 22, and Daniel Kelly 28. These guys are all young or in their prime. So I don't think Stephen Bradley would be too worried, but a couple of injuries at the wrong time could really run their squad thin.
And listen, maybe, you know, there's a out of contract player that they can do something for, and there have been rumours that maybe something might still happen, because listen, can they rely and go through a season on Michael Noonan at 16 and Rory Gaffney, who has been so dogged by injury over the past 18 months or so? The players that they have bought in, and even the different look to the team right now, Gareth. So, like, Aaron McAniff was there last season, but again, just couldn't get a run of games. As you say, it was exceptional that night against Mulder. Suddenly, that's another big option in one of those attacking midfield roles. Matty Healy seems to have come back, and everybody's been very impressed by him. Again, did well in that European game. So the midfield can take on a little bit of a different shape.
Yeah, I love Healy. Healy has really impressed me. Obviously, when he left, he was kind of still learning and development. He's compact, a really complete player. I think it's a big year for Mandroyo as well. I know they did play him in the false nine a couple of times in pre-season. I think it's a big year for him. I think he's going to get a lot of minutes. He was in and out. Obviously, Jack being injured now as well. He's going to get a lot of opportunities. He does have an eye for goal from that midfield. So when you've got, think about Healy, McInniff and Mandrea in that midfield. They all haven't played, Mandrea and McInniff haven't played a lot or been consistent. They're going to have to step up. So to me, that, and not only that, when you have Noonan and the boys up front, if they're not scoring, you've got to get goals from midfield and defenders and wingbacks as well. So I agree with you, Healy and McInniff, huge season, but even more so Mandrea for creativity and for scoring goals.
It feels already, Vinny, that we may end up in a similar scenario to last season, particularly if Shells can go and win last night, where they can get out of the blocks quickly, build a lead, and there's a sort of trust around Shamrock Rovers that they'll be able to just reel them in over the course of the season. And listen, I can already see Stephen Bradley's quotes, if they weren't to win tomorrow night, that they've been there, they've done that. You know, last season they were within 10 minutes of winning the league. They didn't win any of their first four games. They started so slowly. The year before, I think they didn't win any of their first six games. They have been slow starters in recent years. It just feels the Shells have been so, certainly on the first night of the season, and, you know, go down, get a hard fought win last year. The depth in their squad, it's going to be a lot more difficult to reel them in this time around if they can build up that lead.
Yeah, I think, look, before, I'm trying to say this with a health warning, so I'd say particularly the 21-22 teams, that's one, they're one that, like, I've been lucky enough to play for maybe close on 10 years in the league and coach for close on 10 years, now a few years watching it. That 20-22 side was probably one of the best sides I've seen in the last 20-30 years, right? So I'm not being disrespectful, but And he didn't have the league title. You never get any league title easy. But the difference now is there's real serious competition with a lot of the standard of a lot of the teams have improved below the level. I don't think you can afford to give the start that you gave Shelbourne last year. And the difference now is, I think what you're seeing is, you've touched on it, Shelbourne's recruitment has been exceptional, first of all. I think that's really important. When you win the league title, you've got to bring 3-4 players in. They don't necessarily need to go into your starting 11. What they've got to do is drive people on and make people better. And not everyone was going to agree with this statement, but I believe winning your second league title is easier than your first. Okay, why? Because you go down to Waterford and you win, and you just win because your players expect to win. They're league champions. They go up another level. They get 4 or 5% extra LV to other by being champions. Shelbourne behave and are speaking like champion-minded people. That win last week, like, there's no way last week they'd have went down to Waterford and won 1-0 and have 65% possession. They did. They won 1-0. No big deal. Got back on the bus. 3 points in the bag. And they're ready for next game. They have gone up levels in terms of the way they speak, the way they walk, the way they act. And we all know their manager is a sort of champion-minded person. But now the players have belief. So Rovers, that's my point about Rovers. I hope I'm wrong and we have a title race like we did last year. But if they start slow, they're not on the coattails of Shelbourne. This Shelbourne squad are not coming back to the pack this time. And that's the concern for all the others. You better keep your eye on Charles and don't let them get away.
Shelbourne have gone with the same 11 in the first two matches, and even going back to the President's Cup, the only change they made was Caffrey coming in for Coote. Tomorrow night, I'm wondering what they do with Ellis Chapman, Gareth. And is there a possibility that in these sort of games, he might come in for one of Odebeko or Boyd? Or is that not something champions do?
Well, I tell you what, and I don't know what Damon Duff's, I tell you the experience I had when I was playing in the league is whenever, and managers are brilliant at this as well, whenever new players come in the off-season, they don't change it right away. They always tell them, listen, you're coming into the squad. If you're good enough, you will make your way into the squad. And whatever it is about managers is they always get lucky with a suspension or an injury, and then they have an opportunity to bring them in. And I think that's what will happen. I don't see Chapman starting again. I think he's got a bide his time. He's new to the team. He's walking in their League One team, and I think he's got to bide his time. And also, they have to change their team to get him in there as well. He doesn't sit in a flat three. He is more of a 10, more of an advanced. And I don't think he comes in against someone like Rovers. Now, Damien Duff will probably just completely change it now that I've said this, but I don't see him coming into that because you've got to change all lot within the team to facilitate him. And what a player he is as well. I think he plays maybe more against the so-called weaker teams at home. If you want to go in a 4-2-3-1, but the traditional 4-3-3, which Shelburne have played against the bigger teams and especially against Rovers quite consistently, is that flat three in the middle, and that solid four behind them.
And do you see that tomorrow night then? Because obviously they've been going with Odebeko and Boyd as a front two and maybe more of a straight 4-4-2 in the first couple of games. Do you think then that he might change system?
I don't see why not, just because of how well it's worked. Because I think they are a different animal now, and I think the fullbacks are getting on far more with pace as well. So I don't think he'd change a winning team, and I think Damien Duff will see that as well. Taking somebody out that's in the team that has maybe been very good, or like, how do you explain it to him? Tactically, maybe he sees something in Rovers that a bit of weakness, or he wants to go more solid and say, you know what, we don't have to win this game, but we just got to make sure that we don't lose it to keep Rovers behind us by the 7 points or whatever it is. So I don't see him changing it, but you never know.
Vinny, on that tactical side,
Nathan, sorry Nathan, just to touch on that real quickly, what's fascinating about tomorrow is, and for people listening to watch out for, you go back to last season in Tallaght Stadium, Rovers started the game really, really well and dominated Shells, right? So there was big discussions on the sideline. And they played that as Gareth said, 3-3 shape with three in the middle. And they moved John Sullivan back into right back because Rovers really hurt you. In that we're on radio now, you know that sort of left-hand side number 10 position? That's where they can hurt you. Ian Bourke was European level last week. He was absolutely exceptional, right? So if he plays in that position, Shelbourne will not be able to live with that. So he has to make some tactical change. Is that McIlroy and... what's his name? Boyle sitting as two number sixes, as opposed to Boyle's been playing a little bit further forward. So tactically, there's a lot to go on in this game tomorrow. But I think the Shelbourne go as the 4-4-2. It's one of them where you could win the game with that 4-4-2 and outscore Shelbourne or Shamrock Rovers, but you better be prepared to suffer in front of Sean Gannon's position, in front of Paddy Barrett on the other side, in those little pockets. That's where the game can be won and lost tomorrow for Shamrock Rovers. So what does he do? Does he go back? Like, so the best performance last season for me was away in Tallaght when he won 2-0 because of who was against and what it meant. So he ended up in a back five after 15-20 minutes, and John Gannon played sort of a narrow centre half. So it's going to be interesting to see, does he really respect this Rovers team and change his shape, or does he say, no, we're a 4-4-2 team now, and we're going at them? So that's the big tactical dilemma Damien Duff has over the next 24 hours before the game. So I think that's what we can see a little bit, Nathan. It's going to be fascinating to see.
And we've seen St. Pat's struggle over the first 2 weeks against back threes and ultimately maybe back fives at times. What would Stephen Bradley prefer to see tomorrow night then, Vinny? Would he prefer to see the Shelbourne of last season or the Shelbourne of the first two games?
Genuinely, they've been better on the eye this season, but tactically Stephen Bradley would prefer to see the Shelbourne of last season, as in a 4-3-3. Yes, absolutely, because the Rovers box in midfield with two number 10s will really get hurt in that shape, okay? And they struggle tactically in those half positions, inside right and inside left. So that would be the challenge. So I'd say he preferred that way of playing. So you'll be isolating Coyle and McIlroy in that position if you go that way. So he'll have to slightly change the shape a little bit. I think Bradley preferred last year's or this year's style because it'll give them a little bit more freedom higher up the pitch.
Yeah, and if you think, Nathan, as well, back to the October game last year where Rovers were very comfortable. They were really comfortable in their 2-0 win. Now, I know Shells were missing a few players from that and they didn't need to go and win it. They were very defensive. I don't think you see that on Friday night. I think Shells have grown in confidence. I think the players have grown in confidence. I think Shelbourne will be much more attacking. They were very poor on the night that night, and I don't think it'll happen on Friday. I think it'll be a much more exciting game, and I think Rovers will kind of see it as an opportunity as well to go and lay down a marker, because Shells have got it their own way against Derry. Derry never laid a glove on them. They were very poor, and obviously they had a professional performance down in Waterford. So I think Rovers will go and say, you know what, if we can give them a good body shot here and put a bit of manners on them, I think they'll go and try and do it.
Hello, it's Owen Chehan here from Off The Ball, and the FIFA World Cup 2026 is here. And let's be honest, the matchday version of ourselves can look a little committed. Jerseys, face paint, scarves and questionable weather, whatever you have, maybe even a full costume if your team makes a run, you can look a little worse for wear come the end of it all. But the World Cup, it's not just about the football. It's the atmosphere, it's the nights in the pub, it is the watch parties with your mates, and maybe even meeting someone new. That is where Lynx comes in. As an official personal care sponsor of the FIFA World Cup 2026, Lynx's premium fragrances are here to help you smell your best, even in the middle of full matchday madness. Lynx, smell your best when you look your worst. Now, enjoy your podcast.
There's a thing online about the Premier League that there's always one team in crisis, and the goal is never to be that team that is in crisis. And one of the things that we'll get at the end of this quickfire run of three fixtures is we'll be five games in, and we'll probably be having a very different conversation in a fortnight's time, because pressure will suddenly be starting to come on a couple of clubs, on a couple of different managers. I need to be careful what club I mention now, because I'm going to be trying to push them down that route. Pats, it's not been the season start that they maybe would have expected when they looked at the fixture list. Gareth, are you looking at this as a, you know, the freewheeling nature of last season is gone and there's a bit of pressure on their shoulders, or are they just struggling to figure out how to break down teams now that people are very aware of the attacking threats that are there?
Yeah, I watched the Drogheda game back a wee bit. I mean, it was brilliant, obviously, because of the issue at Talca Park. We were able to watch some of it on Virgin. But I tell you, it didn't fill me with massive confidence, and it definitely wasn't the Pats of the last nine games last year. There was just something missing. I don't know whether it was balance. I don't know. And don't get me wrong, Drogheda were very good on the night. Flat back five, they didn't really create much chances. But the chances that the Pats did create, they weren't clear cut. Yes, you could consider them half chances. I can't remember the last time a Stephen Kenny League of Ireland team didn't create 2-3 clear-cut chances in the game, but that happened on the Friday night against Drogheda. They just weren't good. Listen, it's a million-dollar question, but they need a response, especially against a Sligo team that's really struggling. And you know what? Sligo were giving up cheap goals. If you look at the goals that they've conceded in the first two games, they're all preventable. They were really, really slack. So Pats will be hoping for that. They'll be hoping to gain a bit of confidence and hoping that this is the start of their run, essentially.
We were down in AM&DC Park last Friday night for the game, and one of the things that surprised me was the two wingers, Vinny, who were so strong at the end of last season, Mulroney and Elbazedi. Elbazedi was taken off, and we were probably surprised in commentary it wasn't Mulroney. He could have taken either of them, because they had no impact in the game at all. Is Chris Forrester's injury a big part of that? That they just don't have the creativity to release those guys? Or what are you seeing?
I think I've seen a mixture of a few things. One is, I think the pitches at the moment don't necessarily suit certain teams. You include Pembroke Rovers in that. And by the way, Galway's pitch was fine. It cut up as you'd expect, but it was fine. I think the speed of play that Pats need to play at with these wingers has probably slowed down. Lennon coming out, particularly away from home, affected them. But Bagley came in. He is your passer. I think he is like a different type of Forrester. But you're right, Winston Forrester is a bit of a loss to get them playing. But Mulroney is a little bit like that, where I once spoke to an agent in Scotland around signing a couple of players, and he brought up some winger to me, and I was like, yeah. He goes, yeah, he's your typical winger. He's very good for a few weeks and then goes missing for a few weeks. So it's a real one of them where Mulroney is a streaky footballer. When he's good, he's very good. And he can't come off of, like, first half of last season, he was really average. So and he finished the season so strongly. So it's a mixture of all them things. A couple of fine margins are going against them as well. That happens. I listened to Stephen's interview with you, Nathan, on the pitch. He came across really frustrated. I know the way he talks, and I'd say he had a few harsh words with a lot of them players in the dressing room. I'd imagine that went down.
Well, it took him about 45 minutes to come out of the dressing room.
Yeah, I can imagine how that conversation. Gareth has been in that dressing room. I can nearly repeat word for word what was said. I would also say he made a couple of references to penalties. Look, and we all do that as managers or coaches. Like, he got away with one the week before against Rotterdam. That's the way it goes. I have to say, I didn't. When you watch it on TV at the time and different things, you weren't stonewalled, should have been spotted straight away. I can see his frustration on that one. So a couple of things have gone against them. But they've got to pick up 3 points, I think, this week. Again, talking about coming back to Shelbourne, that can't chase forever in a day. It feels like they've a big couple of weeks coming up to get the season up and running. So it's just a little bit flat at the moment, and there's so many different reasons for it. Keane obviously took his goal really well. They're waiting on Melia to come back from injury. He's had a back injury. There's a lot of things coming, but it hasn't been a good start. So I said it last week, it's easy to freewheel, it's easy to do no pressure. When you're going away to Galway or home to Drogheda and it's still all after 60 minutes, people take risks, take chances, do sloppy things. When there's nothing at stake at back end of last season, that doesn't happen. So watch this space with Pats, you know.
From Sligo's point of view, like, very worrying performance last week against Drogheda, Gareth. And like I mentioned when we were doing our season preview, chatting to John Russell at the season launch. And look, you know, I think John's fairly even keeled most of the time, but just the sort of sense that he was trying to lower any expectations and maybe an acceptance of everybody that expectations had to be lowered because they had just lost so many key men, and the ownership structure of the club means that unfortunately that might be the future for Sligo Rovers. And it looks from the first couple of weeks like, you know, they've just lost too much quality.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, and it's not even quality in a certain area. It's quality right up the spine of the team. I mean, it's not fringe players or players that were in and out or wingers or fullbacks. It's a keeper, a centre half, obviously went halfway through the last season, two centre midfielders and your main couple of strikers and your main wingers. So, I mean, managing expectations, anybody that follows League of Ireland will know that John Russell last year did an incredible job, and it looks like he's going to have to do an even bigger job this year. And if it means going with kids, it's about going into that pool of players and recruitment and getting them, whether it be through the academy, whether it be players that are available immediately through other clubs, loan signings. He's got to do something to patch holes. But let me tell you, in the first two games against Drogheda and Waterford, giving up easy goals and having no points is not a good start. Even if you pick up a draw and get yourself modern, it's half the battle. So they've got a massive. I think it was a year too early last year when I picked for them to go down and struggle. I think it's going to be this year. And listen, nobody should be getting on Sligo's back about this, or John Russell, or any sort of pressure on the manager. He done wonders last year. I think it's just going to be a season too far and too many quality players going out the door, and not a good recruitment. So it's going to be a long season.
Are you saying they're going down now?
I've been saying it for 16 months. But no, it's going to be a long season, and I feel for John Russell as well, because he did such a good job last year, we've seen it many times, you do well, the second season syndrome is always, always, always difficult, and especially when you lose most of your players. So it's going to be a tough few weeks. Pats aren't going to get it easy. There's going to be no easy points in the league this year. So it's not a case of Pats are guaranteed 3 points, especially at home. So their home form is pivotal, very similar to Cork and Drogheda.
Obviously, Kev Doherty was, you know, understandably quick to point out people were writing Drogheda off this season, and they've started so well, and they got Galway United tomorrow night at Sullivan and Lamb Park. What have you seen from Drogheda, Vinny, that maybe people weren't expecting?
I think what we've seen, what we did expect, to be fair. I still think Drogheda will be somewhere between sort of the bottom three positions, and if they finish the same position they did last year, that's success. I think they'll have struggles. I think some of the players will have to adapt to going full time. There's an element of that will take a little bit of time. I think we've seen, you know, what we expect from them. They've done really well in the loan signings that will play out. I think for me, it's a little bit wait and see. I think we know more about Drogheda after sort of 10 games as opposed to one or two. They dug in, done really well against Pats, probably deserved a point because of the way they dug in. They brushed us off Sligo last week, very easy. But I think a bigger test in many ways are still to come. So a lot of us would probably, don't want to say it, but we'd be surprised if Drogheda, like, Drogheda are either last or second last for me come the end of the season, and it's a matter of what other teams do, whether that's Sligo have enough about them to finish ahead of them. So I think that's what we'll see. I take their first two results with a pinch of salt at the moment, and I wait and see.
Goy United, as we know, have plenty about them, and that was a big win at a packed game in DC Park last week. A couple of players stood out, obviously Patrick Hickey with the two goals again, and just that role he plays in the team, Gareth, where, like, they're playing with a front two, but he, like, for a team that get criticised for their style of play, they're playing with a front two and a guy who almost seems to play as a number 10 in behind them.
I know. Honestly, God, it's as if we're picking on Ollie and John. It's a disgrace, because not even the goals they're scoring, the way they're playing, it's the actual manner of their goals. I mean, the goal down in Cork where Paddy Hickey scored it, it's an unbelievable cross and it's an unbelievable header and off the post. And that's the threat that they're getting. And it almost, like Shells a little bit, they're evolving as well. They're always not going to get away from that grit and resilience and the type of player that they sign. But they've also then taken it on a level and they're becoming a wee bit more expansive and scoring goals. I think, obviously the transfer window was just closed. I was very surprised that they didn't get another striker in there, just to kind of compliment Stephen Walsh, you know. But Hickey scoring from midfield, I talked about it before when you talk about Shamrock Rovers, you talk about Derry and Bowes. You've got to have midfielders that are scoring goals. And if you can have a centre midfielder or a 10 that scores goals, there's too many of these modern 10s that just look good in the eye but don't actually get any assists and goals. And Paddy Hickey is definitely not that type of player. So if he can start scoring goals, they can get a few goals from their centre halves as well. I think Galway are in for another season similar to last season. I don't see them anywhere near the bottom four, five.
This guy did.
I'll tell you who's been brilliant. Sorry, Greg Cunningham. I mean, the way so many players come back from England and they're tired looking, it just doesn't work in League of Ireland. He looks like, you know, from the outside looking in, he looks like he's got something about him in terms of, from a leadership point of view, he looks like he's a proper football person, and the way he conducts himself on the pitch as well, he's excellent in terms of what he does. He's huge for them. I think he deserves special mention because we all know he's had a great career in England and he's gone to a next level from League of Ireland. But so many of them lads come back and don't do it. He's come back and he's doing really well for them.
And, like, I don't know where they're getting these guys from, but Moses Dyer, who started up front last week, again, really dogged, bit of a pain in the ass, works his ass off. So you're going to win a lot of second ball then for Hickey because he's making life uncomfortable for defenders. They bring him in. Asua was... Hickey's going to get man of the match because he got a couple of goals, but Asua on the right-hand side, again, one of these guys are going, like, one of the title contenders should be looking at this guy. Their ability to find these gems is second to none.
Yeah. Go ahead, Funny.
No, I was just going to say, but it's also a blend of League of Ireland old skill, not old skill, but sort of seasoned pros in there. When you look at Jimmy Cohen and Bruder, fellas have been around the block. So they have that element to them. Regan Donlan wouldn't be big names in the league, but fellas that know their stuff. Like, and obviously Walsh knows the stuff as well. So there's a great blend. And a lot of that comes from John and Ollie's hard work, Ollie's sort of connections to skill, Irish skills football. Be heavily involved in the Irish skills setup, the international setup for a long time. Because of that, then that will lead on to a big insight into the American market. So Ollie's network is huge, and John has tapped into that with him, and you can imagine the two of them are just workhorses. I mean, if Galway aren't playing and there's any game on, you'll see Ollie Horgan there or John Caulfield, one of them. So the work they're doing outside of their own sort of getting their own team ready is paying off in abundance.
Yeah, and you know what I like as well, Nathan, is they I talked about it before about loyalty to your players that have got you up as well. You look at Hurley there, played at the weekend, centre midfield. What a player. Cove, got Galway started in the first division, got them up, and is now showing that just because you're an unbelievable player in the first division doesn't mean you can't transfer that into the Premier Division. That the gap is not that big, especially if you're willing to put in the work and train hard. And the coaches, we know Ollie Horgan, we know what John does. If you're not doing the basics right, then you probably don't play. And he does the basics really well, but he's also got a really good eye for a pass and can get up and down the pitch. I like him a lot.
There must be a few quid around Derry for Garth McGlynn, considering how much money they're throwing around at the moment. So this is an incredible situation where Kevin Holt leaves Dundee United, who are having a good season in Scotland, because the money's too good in the League of Ireland. Did we ever think we'd see the day?
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. I mean, listen.
They got to win the league this year. Like, this, anything else is a failure. And like Tiernan Lynch after the game against Shells, when I was chatting to him, was like, "Oh, obviously we're building and it's going to take time and all that." Like, you ain't got that when you're buying this quality of player.
Nathan, do you think they're going to win the league?
No.
No. And anybody?
So what are they doing?
Hey,
what are they doing? Why are they buying a load of lads in their 30s?
I tell you what they're doing. They're asleep at the wheel when it comes to recruitment. Derry City are throwing money, and they've spent, and this is not factual, but they've spent well over $1 million on four players in their 30s that are basically have got 2 years. So in 2 years' time, when they walk out the door, that money is going to walk out with them, and Derry City will be further back than they are right now. They're asleep at the wheel when it comes to the academy. It has been like this for the last 10 years, decade. I've been writing about it. I've been talking about it. No one is listening, and it's becoming more and more desperate. Now, two things. I do not blame the manager, and I do not blame the players that are accepting this money and coming up to Derry to play. And I have to say, listen, Derry could go and win the league this year. And if they do, I'll be the happiest man in the world. But let me tell you something now. They will be in a worse place in 2 years, even if they do win the league this year, which I don't think
So who do you blame?
Listen, I talked about it. There's loads of people doing loads of good work in Derry. For me, it's the higher-ups within the club. It's not Philip O'Doherty, because he's not really spending this money. He's contributing the money and giving up his money, and he's an incredibly generous man. And what he's done for Derry City over the last 15, 20 years has been incredible. And he's even been involved in the league before that. Anytime a new manager comes into Derry, he can do whatever he wants. And I've had this conversation with the chairman, Philip. I says, you cannot give control of your football club to a manager that on average will be there a year and a half, 2 years. So you're telling me he can change the academy, he can change the transfer, he can change the budget, he can change the strategy, he can change everything. It's not, there's no fundamental blueprint that the manager's got to work with like in every other club.
But ultimately then, Gareth, it is the manager's fault. He's signing the players from what you're saying.
So hold on a minute, Vinny. He's scrapping for his job. As Nathan says, he's going to try and win the league this year. He believes by signing these players, he has got a better chance of winning the league this year. Whereas somebody at the club should be grabbing him around the neck and saying, hold on a minute, you're going to leave us in an absolute mess in 2 years whenever you haven't got any early 20s playing or mid-20s players playing.
With all due respect,
I do not blame the manager.
Yeah, but all due respect, you're suggesting that someone else is making these decisions. The manager is going to be judged by these signings.
Oh, yeah.
But hopefully they work out for him. On a personal level, he's a really good guy, Turner. Ultimately, it's his responsibility. He's taking the club down this path now.
Yeah, but I don't think Gareth is saying that these are bad signings. I think he's saying long-term for the club, it doesn't make sense to be investing this much money in players in their 30s.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, in my heart as a fan, Kevin Holt's a wonderful player. He's going to be a great addition. And there's been a massive hole in Derry's centre defence for 2.5 years and hasn't been addressed. But in 2 years' time, there's going to be an even bigger hole, and you're going to be X amount of money down. It's not the manager that I blame. It's the control that he has over the player budget and the budget. And I'm not blaming the players. And the players for right now is grand. But he's got to go and sign a 23, 24-year-old centre-half to complement that. You can't just keep signing 30, 31, 32, 33 year old players. It's financially draining, and it's risky.
We've seen.
So do the people at Derry want their club to take a long term view and sign the best players between 20 and 25 and forgo a league for the next couple of years and build? Is that what you're suggesting they do? I don't know. Like what?
No, their strategy is they just want to win a league. Like whether it's next year or the year after, that's it. Whereas my idea is, do you want to win a league in next year, or do you want to win it back to back in 10 years? And that's the question that Derry City have got to ask themselves. And right now, and in the last decade, the only answer has been, we want to win the league next year.
Derry has provided so many great players to the national side, to the league. And look, a lot of them have come back to the club. But where are the great young players out of Derry? Like, we see Sean Patton, who I think is Letterkenny, has, he came on the opening night at Talca Park, and he's, you know, still a teenager. But like, where the best young players in Derry, are they still there? Are they just not producing them anymore? Are they coming through the club's academy? Why isn't there a sort of conveyor belt to their senior team?
I mean, I don't want to completely bash Derry City. You know, it's the academy hasn't been set up properly, or hasn't been run properly for a while. You know, and it's not just Derry, Nathan. I mean, obviously Patton's from Donegal. I'm from Donegal. There's always been a good amount of Donegal people. Stephen McLaughlin, Mark Fearn, all these great Donegal players. Paul Hegarty obviously played with the club. It goes further than Derry City. You know, we should really be controlling everything from Sligo up, and even and through the Northern Ireland. So that's the caption area that we've got. But yet we haven't got a good amount of 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22 year olds coming through. And I mean, it's a club problem. It's not the players. The players are there. They're being gobbled up by Coleraine, Lanfield, Sligo. There's young Gareth McElroy down playing centre half at Sligo, 17, 18, 19 years of age. Really good player. Again, Sligo snapped them up. So it's an overall club problem. And again, it's the structures off the field that is the biggest problem that I have been championing about for the last 4 or 5 years. But it's just, and it's not going to change. The idea of the definition of insanity is doing the same thing and expecting a different result, and that's what's happening. They're asleep at the wheel.
We don't have much time left, and you'll be watching Derry against Waterford tomorrow night, so we might have a good chat about Waterford and what they're doing this season. The other game is Cork against Bohemians, and look, Bohemians obviously very happy with life after the opening day win at the Aviva, and then they go up to Derry and they lose. Is that what we're going to see a lot of again this season, Finney, do you think? That there's not going to be, you know, maybe not a massive points tally to win the league, a lot of clubs very evenly matched?
Yeah, I think so. I think there'll be an element to that. I think a lot of teams are evenly matched. I do think the top team should get away from the group this year. Whether that's Pats, Dermot Rovers or Shells should get away. I think they've got more strength in depth. But those are recruiting really well. They look like a well-structured team now. They look like they've got a lot of stuff better. They could probably do league cabinets, could centre-half, obviously, and Cornwall is coming back from a long-term injury. Probably feels like they could do a little bit more pace, maybe in the fullback areas, or a little bit different options. Parsons does really well for them. But ultimately, still think they need a striker. We know there's a lot of noise about the striker they brought in, but they probably need someone to finish goals for them. But I think Bows have to do better this year. They have to be more consistent in the league, and I think they should be pushing for that fourth place without fail. But it feels like they're going to be up and down a little bit, and that can't be good enough. I think Bows' bad run has gone on too long over the last couple of years, and who's to blame, I don't know. But they've got to become more consistent on a week in, week out basis over the season.
All right, we are out of time for this week's League of Ireland podcast. A reminder, full live and exclusive radio commentary tomorrow night of Shelburne against Shamrock Rovers. We're on air from 7 o'clock on News Talk. I'll be with Richie Towell and Owen Sheehan will be there as well. So we'll have the full show live from Talca Park. Gareth, great stuff. Vinny, thanks as ever.
Cheers. See you, man. Thank you.
See ya.
The LOI Pod. On Off the Ball, catch live and exclusive national radio commentary of the Men's League of Ireland Premier Division on Off the Ball all season.